Hey there, everyone. Good morning. What is up? Okay, so this is totally weird doing the show this early, but things need to get done. So for those of you who were not here, I wasn't here actually last night. So just an update on what's going on and why I'm even doing the show at this hour. So normally I do my shows immediately after Dynamite on Wednesdays. It's an entirely different crowd, an entirely different atmosphere. But yesterday I was not here because I was super busy. I had multiple events to attend. In the morning, I was at Premier Boxing doing interviews there, covering their press conference. And then immediately after that, a couple of hours later, I was over at ONE Championship doing interviews there, attending their press conference. So just a little bit of back-to-back stuff. And so I wasn't able to watch Dynamite until like 9 o'clock at night for me. And so I was like, okay, I either go super late or I go the following morning. So I decided to do this show super early, bright and early the next day. So thank you guys so much for those of you who tuned in here today, because I was like, it's super early. Like, who's up? I don't know who's up. So anyways, we're going to go ahead and chat about last night's Dynamite, which was Fyter Fest week 2, July 20th, even though today it is July 21st. However, here's the cool thing about doing the show here on Thursdays is that, or at least for today, is that there may be some people that don't get to tune into the night show. So if you are here and this is your first time getting to actually watch the show live, please feel free to let me know if you're here for the first time. That would be awesome to know. But let's see what we got here. We got a lot of awesome people. I'm going to give a couple of shout outs here before we actually get into this podcast. And let's see who's in here. Let's give some shout outs to Jack Marmont, who's in here. Matt Logan is in here as well. We got Christopher, shout out to Christopher, Tayab, Sam, DJ, Cap Team Mystery, D-Train, Riot Maker, Sam 3, My Name Is Not Arrow, Bonkers LFC. Thank you guys so much for coming in here. All right, so let's get to this, guys. Let's chat some Dynamite, because overall, I thought it was an okay show. I didn't think this show was like, you know, bonkers by any means. I didn't think it was like a very memorable show. I thought there were some things that I kind of felt were like, okay, whatever. You know, here's the thing, though. I got to start off by saying this, though. I normally watch Dynamite Live, obviously, and so I'm watching with the commercials, and this was the first time that I ever seen Dynamite without commercials. This was the first time ever. I don't think I've ever seen the show without commercials. And I think it was a different experience for me. It went by, I mean, it always goes by really fast with or without the commercials. So that kind of remained the same. For some reason, like it just, the show felt a little different to me, not seeing it with commercials and also it being super late at night. So I did think there was a lot of good stuff on the show, but I thought it was an okay show for the most part. I didn't think it was like, you know, super groundbreaking by any means. But let's go ahead and kick things off with the opening match, because this match to me was probably one of the most surprising ones throughout the night, just because we had a lot that actually went down in this and things ended up playing out a little bit differently than what I had expected. So first and foremost, we had Brody King versus Darby Allin. Now, here's the thing. Kicking this off, the shocking thing about this, or not the shocking thing, but rather the thing that took me by surprise for sure, is that, you know, Darby Allin, he's more of, you know, this fan favorite in AEW. This is the guy that, you know, was protected for so long, you know, was TNT champion, was the first opponent for CM Punk, and, you know, has been aligned with Sting, has gotten to do all of these really great things. So obviously he's on a different level in AEW. They have managed to build him into a star. When you think AEW, one of the people that you think is a Darby Allin, right? And he's one of the favorites. If you're like a casual coming in to watch AEW, chances are you're gonna like Darby Allin, you know, depending on what you're into, obviously. But still, Darby Allin tends to be a favorite. Now, Brody King, you know, he debuted not too long ago, got brought in with the House of Black, etc. But for the most part, you know, ever since he's been, ever since he debuted in AEW and has been with the House of Black, for the most part, he hasn't really had like a like the focus hasn't necessarily been on him. It's been on the House of Black overall, like the entire group, not just, you know, this one particular member. And so for the most part, I kind of felt like, okay, Brody King is going to come in here and he's really just going to be like, you know, just somebody who's part of the House of Black. Like I really wasn't expecting much more. Like I was expecting, okay, he's a member of the House of Black and that's kind of going to be about it in terms of some of the light that's featured on him. Well, he recently faced Jon Moxley for the interim AEW World Championship. And I thought he was an interesting pick because, again, if you would have given me this like laundry list of guys who I thought were going to be some of the first opponents for Jon Moxley, I probably was not going to guess Brody King. Okay, so we ended up doing that. And now fast forward to this match with Darby Allin. Now, this was a little bit surprising to me because Brody King pretty much dominated and manhandled Darby Allin throughout this entire match. The entirety of this match was Brody King literally kicking Darby's ass. Like everything that I wrote down was all about what Brody King did. Like he was I'm going to run through some of the moments that I thought kind of stood out to me a little bit or that I enjoyed and then kind of continue talking about that. So Brody King immediately was like using his entire body on Darby. Like I loved him just like doing the sentons on Darby and just really like really using his full body weight to like bring this guy down. And Darby's a small guy, so it doesn't take much to, you know, I'm not going to say it doesn't take much, but it just looks impressive when you have somebody of Brody King's size and then somebody of Darby's size. Regardless, it's going to look pretty damn good. So I did think, okay, this is going to be a really good follow-up match for Brody King coming off of that match with Jon Moxley. I was expecting Darby Allin to get more offense during this match. Well, he did get a little bit. He really didn't get that match that much, excuse me. Some of the other moments that I loved during this was Brody had a really brutal chop on Darby that I thought was really good. When Darby went for the crossbody and Brody just kind of like I think he does like blocked or something. I thought that was really good. Then there was this moment where Brody just like lifts up Darby Allin from like the straps of his short and literally just like spins him and tosses him like he's a freaking pillow or something. I thought that was pretty interesting. So the majority of this match was Brody King beating on Darby. And after we came back from commercial break, I'm thinking like, okay, cool. Like he gets this diving cannonball onto Brody King. And I'm thinking, this is it. This is the part where, you know, Darby Allin picks up his steam again and he ends up winning this match. That's what I was expecting. So he hits the code red. And then after that, I thought that it was over there, but it was not over just then. And afterwards, we ended up seeing another cannonball into the corner from Brody to Darby. I thought that was a pretty awesome moment. And then Brody choking Darby while he's like hanging off of like the ropes. And then he nearly gets counted out. I really liked that spot. And I wouldn't have been pissed if like it ended that way, only because they rarely do these countouts in AEW. So you got to think like if they like when they do them, they got to mean something. And in this moment in this match, if they would have done the count out, I wouldn't have been against it whatsoever just because of the way that the match was going and how that spot looked when he was like choking him and Darby's body was just hanging. It almost looked like he was being hung. I thought that was a very interesting visual. But anyways, he ended up hitting the Gonzo Bomb and Brody King gets the win. And I will tell you, I was surprised when Brody King got the win because the entire time I was waiting for Darby Allin to essentially get his moment back and get the win. So I was pretty surprised by the fact that not only did Brody King dominate Darby Allin, but he also beat him. Now, I don't know if this was like the right way to go about it. I don't know, but it did take me aback a little bit where I'm like, whoa, you know, Darby did not look too great in this. So this was very interesting and it kind of felt very, very new. But let's talk about the post-match because following this, we see Brody King kind of continue the attack on Darby Allin. And so immediately the lights go out. And here's the thing. When the lights go out, I know we're supposed to get like excited, like, oh my God, something's going to happen. I don't know why, but recently, every time the lights go out, I think it was ever since the Satnam Singh thing, if the lights go out in AEW, instead of getting like overly excited, I get anxious. I have this feeling of like anxiety where I'm like, ooh, what's gonna happen? Like instead of being excited, I get a little anxious. I'm thinking like, this is either going to be really good or really bad. What the hell is going to happen? And that changed immediately after they did the Satnam Singh debut. Anyways, so immediately after that, we see Sting come out. We see Malakai Black basically stare him down. That was after the, that was when the lights went down. So Sting had came out already, and then the lights went down, and he was facing off with Malakai Black. Malakai Black, Brody King, they take out Sting, and then afterwards they have Miro coming in wearing sunglasses, like if there's a sun inside the arena. I thought that was interesting too. So Miro ends up staring down Malakai and Brody. So I did kind of like that they, you know, sort of leveled up Brody King during this, because again, he had that match with Jon Moxley. He has a definitive win over Darby Allin. So that's all fine and dandy. It's just kind of weird to see. But regardless, it seems to me like they're focused, like they're, you know, incorporating Miro into this. They're incorporating, you know, this thing with him and Malakai Black and Brody King. And so I like the opportunity that is there for that. Anyway, so there you go. That was kind of a lot of what went down in the opening of this show. So for those of you who are here in the chat, let me know your thoughts. I'm going to pull out a couple of comments. If you want to make sure your question, comment, or statement gets read on the stream, 100% guaranteed, you can send in a super chat, but I will be bringing in some random ones as well. All right, here we go. Let's see what we got. This is from My Name Is Not Errol, who says, what's next for Brody? Pinning Sting? I can see that more than Malakai pinning the Icon. I don't know what's next for Brody, but it does seem to me, and it screams to me, that if they put him in this match with Jon Moxley, which again, like I said, he wasn't like the first person that popped into my brain to have him in that match, right? And then he has his competitive match with Darby and pins Darby. Like, it tells me though that like AEW is planning on doing more with him than just having him in the backgrounds or just part of, you know, the House of Black. You know, he's still going to stay part of the House of Black, but just, you know, doing a little bit more with him is what I'm trying to get at. So, yeah, I don't know specifically what's next for Brody King, but something tells me that he's not just going to be like in the background. But, you know, also leveling him up levels up Malakai Black. So whatever you want to do with Malakai Black, that's, you know, having like this like force to be reckoned with when it comes to the House of Black, I think is going to also help out Malakai. All right, let's get some more comments in here. This one's from Fernando, who says, good morning, Denise. Brody King looked very impressive last night. Wherever they decide to take the TNT title from Wardlow, I am here for Brody versus Wardlow with Brody going over. I feel like it's too early to say because I just feel like Wardlow, like it took so long to get Wardlow to this point where I wouldn't want to see it end so quickly. I actually want to see like Wardlow have a pretty, like a pretty lengthy run as TNT champion. So I wouldn't say I'm like there yet, but I do like the idea of it, just not right now. We got another comment. This one is from CT Hull, who says, loved the opening match. Sting being choked out surprised me, and Miro clearly had different colored glasses lens. Did he really have different lens? I didn't notice that. All right, let's get some more comments up in here. This is from Matt Charles 1989, who says, I don't want to see a Sting or a Darby turn. When the time comes, I just want to see Sting just pass the torch to him, maybe just handing him his bat or something. It would be interesting to see that, like, a Sting or a Darby turn. It would be weird because I think that we've already gotten accustomed to like seeing them together and being this duo, and they're pretty cool, you know. They're two grown men with going through a goth phase, right? Who doesn't cheer for that? So that was interesting too. We got people also saying that this was best of the best match of the night. Also, shout out to A47 Rod, who says this is his first time watching live, listening while at work. Hope I can help make this next hour at work go pretty speedy, dude. Thank you so much for sending this in. Small Fry 14 says, awesome, Hollywood Denise is live in the UK time at 4:30. Holy shit, it's 4:30 in the UK? Man, I just woke up like an hour ago, so it's always so weird. Time differences and stuff. Shout out to Sheldon Jackson for sending in our first super chat of this morning. Sheldon Jackson says, Brody King getting a clean win over Darby helps Brody so much because I believe Brody is a future main eventer, and I can't wait till Black versus King. So there you go. Obviously, more people kind of, I kind of mentioned, you know, leveling up Brody King also levels up Malakai Black. And if and when they do decide to break up the House of Black, obviously they're going to go in that direction with Brody and Malachi. And you can't have Malachi. You got to give Brody a little something, right? He's got to have a little something. Well, he's starting to get a little bit of those somethings underneath his belt whenever he, you know, eventually they have this breakup at the House of Black. I don't want it to happen anytime soon, though. I want it to be a while. I don't like when breakups happen like extremely fast. I like to get things like, you know, give it a little time, right? Give it a little time, let it sink in, etc. All right. So thank you so much to Sheldon Jackson for the very kind super chat, dude. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Why am I trying to sound like Elvis? I don't know. We got another super chat from Matt Logan. Woo! Thank goodness. Matt Logan says, glad to see Brody get elevated. There's nothing wrong with Darby losing after you won so many matches in 2021. Yeah, dude, Darby, like I said, you know, Darby has been protected for a very long time. He's had a lot of, you know, a lot of cool things happen in AEW. And this is, you know, this win, it was surprising. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, the way that Brody King won was surprising. And the way that he dominated Darby was so surprising. But I don't think it hurts Darby just because of everything that he has done. And you know, the fans aren't going to forget that. Like, Darby isn't going to look like less than with this particular loss. But it was surprising, though. Because, like, dude, the man was manhandled by Brody King. So that was very surprising. I think just the fact that he didn't get as much offense as I thought that he was going to get in this match, I think that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the surprisement factor. But thank you very much to Matt Logan for also sending this in. Jack Mormon says, because he's got a new biopic out, Elvis. He does? I'm not even an Elvis fan. I don't know. I just woke up today and I was like doing Elvis voice. I don't know what's happening. Morning shows, guys. It's weird. All right. Let's go ahead and move on from all of this stuff here. And we'll talk more about Ricky Starks and Cole Carter later on. But we did get a backstage segment where Ricky Starks tells him, like, oh, the last time we saw you, you were sleeping with the fishes, and now you're here swimming with the sharks. For those of you who, I mean, I'm sure you guys all know, but obviously he's a former NXT guy and going by Troy Donovan. And they basically, he was, you know, released from the company, let go, whatever, due to a policy issue. And the policy issue hasn't been necessarily revealed, but apparently they were like, you can come back in a year or something. So I don't know, maybe it was an age thing. I have no idea what the hell happened there. But the point is, the guy had to get written off and taken off the show. And, you know, he was part of, you know, Tony D'Angelo's faction on NXT 2.0. And they basically did this thing in order to write him off because they had two taped, so he was released, and then they still had two taped episodes. So he was on two episodes of NXT 2.0, even though he wasn't with the company anymore. But the final one, where they basically explained his missing, was basically having Tony D'Angelo pretend that they threw him over a bridge and essentially, like, kill him. You know, like, they killed him because they just said he's off, you know, sleeping with the fishes now. So anyways, that's the whole thing with that. So that's pretty funny. Let's get into this next match, though, and we'll talk about the Ricky Starks match later on. So we got best friends, Trent Barretta and Chuck Taylor against Wheeler Yuta and John Moxley. So this one, this was a fine match. This was a fine tag team match. Here's the thing. So I didn't think this match necessarily picked up until after the commercial break. Like, after the commercial break was when I started getting into it a little bit more. The first portion of this match was kind of like, eh. I was watching it and I was like, okay, fine, whatever. But I didn't really, like, feel like it picked up until after the commercial break. It was really until, you know, John Moxley, you know, he gets so fired up, and the guy's getting fired up. He's going to fire up the viewers at home. So he, you know, gets fired up. We come back from commercial break. He's stomping Trent in the head. That's always fun to see. We see multiple pile drivers executed by the best friends. We see a near fall from Trent after he tries to pin Yuta after one of those pile drivers, which was good. We see Yuta execute a suplex on Trent. Looked very nice towards the end. And then finally, Yuta ends up getting the win for his team. But what I do want to talk about here is that even though there were some moments that I thought were okay, I just really wasn't too into this match. The thing that I want to bring up, though, is that we got to see Wheeler Yuta and John Moxley team up here tonight. And for me, it's like, So it's new, right? It's like feels new having them team up, right? And I like them as a team, but they have such different vibes though. Like, I just like, we've seen Wheeler Yuta get to this moment where we've seen him get to this place in AEW where he's, you know, kind of goes a little bit mad and whatnot. We've seen little glimpses of that from him, but they don't have the same vibe. I don't necessarily feel like I'm too crazy about Wheeler Yuta and Jon Moxley. It's fine. They're just not necessarily to me on the same like playing field. And so it took me a second to kind of get used to it. I just feel like they're like, you got Jon Moxley who's like, you know, all going freaking crazy. And Wheeler Yuta is just a little bit more, just a little different. It's fine. So they're just different guys, but it could work, guys. It could work. Reminder that we're obviously, you know, Yuta getting the win for his team. Great, because he's going into this match on Saturday against Daniel Garcia. And Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor. So this was fine. This felt more of a thing to like help set up this stuff with Ring of Honor and whatnot. All right, so let's go ahead and continue on from here. Let's see what we got. My name is Not Errol, who says Orange and Regal on commentary with some funny shit. There was something, there was a moment, was it during, yeah, it was, there was a moment where, there was a moment where, I forgot what it was, that Orange Cassidy gets asked. He gets asked something, and then they're like, oh, is it true? And he's like, I don't know. I forgot what it was, but at that moment kind of stood out to me during commentary, though. That was pretty funny. All right, guys. Let's go ahead and move on from here. We also got a comment here from Christopher, who says, best friends versus Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta was a good match. We also got Adrian Smith, who says, it doesn't feel the same without Brian. Yeah, I agree. Because Brian Danielson and Jon Moxley, like, I see them more, you know, they're a little bit more similar. Like, they're different, right? Like, obviously different wrestlers, different competitors, but they have the same, like, aura, you know, like the same vibe. I don't know how to describe it, guys. I don't know how to describe it. Matt Charles 1989 says, yeah, I was dying at that. I don't know. It was funny. It was like, I don't know. Like, he just left them hanging, bro. Can you imagine like doing that? You're asking someone like, hey, I forgot what the hell he asked them though. You know, you're asking somebody something. Can you confirm it? And he's like, oh. Makes you feel stupid, but it worked in this sense though. If it would have been anybody else, oh, you would have felt like so dumb, you know, but it worked in this situation though. All right, guys, let's go ahead and also point this out from Lenny Osborne, who says that Orange Cassidy was annoyed at that finish. All right, let's go ahead and move on from here. All right, guys, let's get into Swerve in Our Glory celebration with Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee, who recently became the AEW Tag Team Champions. And here's the thing, like, that was a pretty great moment. A lot of people were really excited about Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. They've been pretty over ever since they started teaming together. They have, like, you know, as a team, they're doing cool stuff together. Like, my favorite thing, and I've said this before in past reviews when I've been talking about their matches, my favorite thing is that we always get something new. We always get something new from Keith and Swerve, and I like that. So the fact that we always get to see them try new things, it's fun to me. Well, anyways, so they're over with the crowd. We know that the people are happy that they're tag team champions. So they come out. This segment, I get why they did it, and it's cool and it's hip. It's really not for me. I don't think I'm the audience for this, mainly because I'm a nerd and I don't know who, like, what's his name? Kevin is the rapper. I didn't know who he was, guys. Kevin Gates. I'm sorry. I'm lame. I didn't know who he was. I'm in that bubble now. Oh my God. This is what it feels like when you get a celebrity that you don't know. There's been so many times where, like, there'll be a celebrity on TV and then there's like a bunch of people like in the IWC, like all pissed off. Like, I don't know who this person, I mean, I'm not pissed off or anything. I don't know who this person is. Why are they here? You know, we get a lot of that, but obviously like this for me, I was just like, I don't know who this is, but I'll just be excited because I don't know who this is. I can't really be excited for something that I don't know who they are, right? But anyways, they come out, the crowd is chanting for them, you know, really paying a lot of respect to them. They show Kevin Gates, who is a rapper, is what commentary said, so that is my extent of knowledge for that, a rapper. I literally wrote in my notes, sorry, I'm not cool, I don't know who he is. Keith Lee thanks the fans. They tell Kevin a little bit of, you know, they talk a little bit about his music. I kind of tuned out there. Smart Mark Sterling and Tony Nese comes out. Mark has his petition, try to get rid of Swerve. He tries to get Kevin to sign the petition. Kevin doesn't want to sign the petition. Mark then goes into his phase and tells him his music sucks. I like that. Mark Sterling's pretty funny in these situations. So he tells him, your music sucks, right? So Kevin gets, he basically gets out of his seat. He goes over the barricade and he confronts them and he ends up face to face with Tony Nese. And then he like literally punches Tony Nese in the face. So Tony Nese looks like one big dork getting punched in the face here. And then Swerve puts cake in the face of Mark Sterling. This was fine. It was supposed to be like a little comedy segment with celebrity included, get some pop culture mainstream stuff in there. Cool. Harmless. The intention was very clear. Maybe just not for me because, again, I just didn't know who the guy was. So let's go ahead and get some comments in here and see what people are saying about this. This is from, let's see. Let me try to get some good ones in here. I'm trying to get as many as I can. But let's see. We got GLHF.TV who says, Yuta winning with a specific roll-up pin, one that Trent taught him, was brilliant. We got Sheldon Jackson who says, I like the fact that Moxley has added Danielson's head stomp now. Yeah, I agree with that too. Let's see what else we got here. I'm trying to get some interesting ones in here. Sorry, guys. I'm lame. I don't know rap. Let's see. This is from Adrian Smith who says, this segment seems to have gotten a ton of mainstream exposure on Twitter. Did it? Okay, that's good because that's the whole point of this. If you're going to be bringing in a celebrity, even if you don't know who the celebrity is, there are going to be a huge group of people that obviously know who that celebrity is. And the point of bringing in a celebrity is to, you know, kind of have that crossover appeal, right? So, you know, his fans, Kevin Gates fans, be like, oh, what's this AEW stuff he's on? He does some wrestling stuff. Well, what the hell is this? You know, that's the point. So if he got some good exposure on Twitter, that's a good thing. All righty. And let's see what else we got here. Oh, man. Matt Kensley says, I didn't know him either, so I Googled him. And Kevin Gates was recently bragging about having sex with his cousin after finding out they were related. So, yeah, that's all I know about this guy. Well, thank you, because now that's all I know, too. Oh, man, I'm going to have to Google that later on. I don't know what's going on with that. I'll find out later. All right. GLHF TV says he's more known as a producer for Usher, Jay-Z, Mariah Carey, Bow Wow, Ludacris, Destiny's Child. All people I do know here. Good to know because I know all those people. I'm a big fan of Mariah Carey. All right. Let's see what else we got here, guys. Let's go ahead and move on over. David Barkley says, when Vince signs Logan Paul, that means TK counters by putting some rapper nobody heard of on TV. Oh, man, that's not true. Just because, like, I haven't heard of him and other people haven't heard of him doesn't mean that nobody's heard of him, guys. Like, I'm gonna Google him later on and find out some stats, guys. This is like when Bad Bunny came out, I remember, like, Everybody, there was a huge chunk of people that were like, who the fuck's this guy and this and that. And then the second I educated myself and I went and like Googled, if that's what you call education, educated myself, I went and checked out, like, you know, who this Bad Bunny fella is, right? Everybody apparently knows Bad Bunny. Man, I felt so freaking lame. Like, damn, dude, this guy is like freaking huge. You know, all my friends, they all go to his concerts. My little sister knew him. Like, everybody that's not a wrestling fan knew who Bad Bunny was. And I was the one that was like, oh, I didn't know who Bad Bunny was, which I kind of felt really stupid too. But once I saw like his numbers and his stats and how he's competing up there, like in terms of numbers with like BTS, and BTS is huge. Everybody knows BTS. So, you know, it just takes a second to, you know, find out who these people are and, you know, get yourself familiarized with them. So that was like the whole situation with Bad Bunny. And I really, really remember that. All right. Sheldon Jackson sends in a super chat saying, just look up Kevin Gates song Two Phones. Okay. I will do that. I will go on Spotify. Spotify is always a really good indicator to me of how, you know, all of that stuff. All right. Jack Mormont says, an effing Latino and never heard of Bad Bunny. You'd be surprised. Like, guys, my extent, like I know people are like, oh, you're, you know, you speak Spanish and you probably only listen to Spanish music or something. I primarily listen to English music, but my go-tos for Spanish music are people that have been around for like ever. Like I'm talking Shakira, you know, Paulina Rubio, like that's what I'll listen to. You know, I'm listening to more of like the pop Latino and like the icons, like people that have been artists like my entire life, right? So I don't tend to discover new artists in like the Latino music space. Like Bad Bunny is probably the only one that I know of, and the only reason I know about it is because of freaking wrestling. Like it's just not my it's not the kind of music that I normally listen to. So personally, that's where I'm at with all of that. All right, let's go ahead and continue on from here. Sam 3 says, Los Tigres del Norte. I know who Los Tigres del Norte are. I know them. Shit. All right. moving on from here. all right, let's see what we got after this. Let me delete this really quick so I don't talk about the same thing twice. All right, we got the FTW Championship. Ricky Starks defending against Cole Carter. We talked a little bit about Cole Carter at the top of the stream. This match starts off with Ricky Starks, you know, feeling himself, feeling a little cocky. That's kind of who Ricky Starks is, right? Pretty cocky guy. We got some this was, I'll just be real with you guys. This was not a dynamite match to me. I didn't really care for this match. It was not really my cup of tea. We got Carter. He hit a dropkick, a diving crossbody, a clothesline to Starks. Cool. Thumbs up. Nothing that I haven't seen before. Carter's leapfrog was a little clunky looking. It was like one leg's up and the other one's hanging this direction. It was fine. He did a 450, missed it because Ricky Starks got out of the way. Cool, nice 450. Starks hits the spear and gets the win. It was an match. As a, you know, successful win, successful defense for Starks. Great. If it's anything more than that, I'm not really interested. For a one-off, fine, cool, no harm, no foul. If it's anything more than this, I'm not really interested in that. Afterwards, we have Ricky Starks cut a promo. He says he wants to have another challenge, right? And I'm thinking he's going to have another match right now. And I think that's what he wanted people to think. So then Danhausen comes out and he's like, well, okay, I want a challenge. I'll slap your challenge. So he takes a, so Danhausen basically says like, okay, fine, I'll be the person to accept your challenge, right? And Ricky Starks is like, nah, but not today. So then this match is set up, I believe, for next week, actually. And I did like that Ricky Starks kind of threw a little bit of a shot because he goes, not now. I need time to get my neck right. I thought that was pretty funny because he got to the point where a lot of people thought that he wasn't on TV for such a long time because of his neck, even though he was already pretty much like healed. So I think that was kind of like a little bit of a inside joke there. So anyways, there you go. That was pretty funny. All right. Let's see what people are saying. We got people putting over Ricky for, yeah, I really like Ricky Starks. Like, I feel like he's one of the guys that's like underrated because I feel like he's underrated. Like, the guy is great on the mic. He has a lot of charisma. I'm glad anytime he gets TV time, I'm legitimately glad for him. Like, I really like Ricky Starks. And then Matt Charles putting over Starks mentioning the Slim with the Fishes line. Yeah, he mentioned that earlier. That was really funny. All righty. And let's go ahead and move on from here and see. Jack Mormon says Starks' impression slayed me. YT says really looking forward to Danhausen versus Ricky Starks. I agree. Zeno Hour says Ricky deserves a big solo run, but I still don't know what the purpose of the FTW title is. It seemed like it had more purpose when it first like got brought in, and then it was quickly like, oh, nobody cares except for probably just Taz and Ricky Starks. So it's to me, like, I feel bad, but at this point, I don't see the FTW championship as a championship. I see it as, ooh, Jesus Christ. I see it as an accessory. Really. And that's probably not a good thing, but I do kind of see it as an accessory. All right, moving on from here, guys, we got a couple more things to talk about. But before we do, let me take the floor really quickly, guys. And so let me move to the side here. All righty. So for those of you guys who do not know, this podcast is sponsored by Wrestle Rumble, the good people at Wrestle Rumble. I appreciate them very, very much. So for all major pay-per-views for both AEW and WWE, they hold pick'em contests. And in these pick'em contests, they basically get, you get to sign up. You go to the website, RussellRumble.com. You purchase an entry. You get a form. You get asked a bunch of different prop questions about what's going to go down in the pay-per-view. You predict it. If your predictions are spot on, if you're a really, really smart and brilliant wrestling fan, just kidding, you could get lucky, really. But if you go ahead and predict some of the stuff that you think is going to happen on the show, you have a great chance of actually winning and taking home some prizes. So the SummerSlam Pick'em contest is going to be opening very soon. I will let you guys know when that is open over at WrestleRumble.com. But just a heads up on what you can win when you do enter the SummerSlam Pick'em contest. You have the third place winner is going to be going home with a mystery crate. Those are pretty fun, guys. If you haven't seen my unboxing videos, getting mystery items is pretty exhilarating. Who doesn't need a little excitement in their life? Second place is going to be going home with $300, and first place is going to be going home with $500. So that is a good chunk of money. You never know, it could be you. And on top of that, it's just another like extra layer of fun when you're watching pay-per-views. You know, you got a little investment in what's actually going to be going down on the show. So anyways, please make sure to head on over to WrestleRumble.com, enter the SummerSlam Pick'em contest. And on top of that, go ahead and reach out to them. Go hit them up on Twitter, Instagram, whatever your favorite social media platform is, and be like, hey, Russell Rumble, I heard about you on Denise's podcast. That way, when the time is up for them to finish sponsoring me, they'll be like, you know what? A bunch of people came up to me and were like, they heard about us on Denise's podcast. Maybe they'll continue to sponsor. So please make sure to give them some love. Once again, that is Russell Rumble, WrestleRumble.com. And I will let you guys know when the SummerSlam Pick'em contest opens up. All right, guys. And let me move that out. All right, here we go. Oh, man, that was an early morning live read, guys. I was like, pick 'em. So much. All right, let's go ahead and bring this back up here. Alrighty, next up we got Jade Cargill, Kiera Hogan versus Athena and Willow. Man, this was... Honestly, I want to put over Athena and Willow here because, man, they make a good tag team. I don't know how often they're going to be, you know, teaming or doing this thing together, but I kind of want them as an actual team together because I'm a little bit more interested in them together as a duo right now. Like, them being a team together is kind of what I'm interested in right now. Honestly, I think they had a lot of really good moments in this. They showed a lot of great athleticism during this match. They were the standout in this match. There were some good moments here. I really liked the follow-away slam from Jade Cargill to Athena. I thought that was really cool. And we are seeing the improvement in Jade Cargill. Like, it's very clear now. I believe, like, oh God, it's like a couple months ago that Tony Khan revealed that she was working with Bryan Danielson and, you know, he was helping her, like, you know, get better in the ring. Oh, it's definitely showing. Like, you're seeing those improvements. So good for her on all of that. There was a spot during this that I didn't really like. It was Kiera Hogan was supposed to, she was supposed to miss this drop kick, and she did miss the drop kick, but it was just supposed to be like, she was supposed to be like a lot closer to Willow so that Willow could kind of like smack her legs or push her legs down so that it could be very obvious that she missed the drop kick. But instead, it looked like she just did a drop kick onto the air and Willow was just like, girl, you know, like the distance was too much. So I didn't really like that moment. It kind of took away from, you know, what they were doing there. Like, it was just too noticeable of a misfire there. So, you know, that wasn't the great, but everything that I thought Jade, Athena, and Willow did really good in this match. So I do want to go ahead and point that out. Jade does get the win for her team. So good stuff there. Alrighty, guys. And let me go ahead and see what, let's continue on from here. Let's see. Let's get into, after this, let's get into the Thunderstorm promo. So Thunder Rosa, she talks about her upcoming match with Miyu Yamashita over on a Fight for the Fallen for next week. So she's kind of is addressing that. Cool. Then we see Britt Baker come along and she's like, I'm done with these Thunder Rosa promos and this and that. And then they announce that they're going to be in action on Rampage. So this was a lot of more so like these announcements and whatnot. That's kind of it. They need to do more with the AEW Women's Championship on Dynamite. it's very clear that it doesn't feel like a focus. It doesn't feel important on this show. The AEW Women's Championship does not feel important on Dynamite right now. And I kind of wish that they would make it feel a little bit more important because it's your main women's championship. So I would like to see a little bit more emphasis on that championship and the champion. But I've kind of said that a million times at this point. I'm a broken record. We got Uriel Landeros who sends in a super chat. Thank you so much, man. Uriel says, killing it with your channel's interviews this week, Denise. Thank you very much. Uriel says, dug the way Jade was portrayed in her match. Why can't Thunder be showcased like this? You really just pulled this thought out of my head, guys. I feel like we just waited like so long to like finally see Thunder Rosa as champion. And then now it's almost feel like reminiscent, not so much like I remember like Sheeta, she was one of those champions that was like never seen, like ever. And then Britt Baker, from what I remember to like the tail end of her run, there wasn't, you know, that much focus on her either. And so now it feels like the same thing has happened to Thunder Rosa, where I'm like, man, there just needs like your AEW Women's Champion, whoever it may be at any point, should be like the woman on the show that is being like, oh shit, like she's here, that's our champion, let's get up and react, whether she's a heel, whether she's a babyface, whatever she's doing. And it just feels like an afterthought. And that bums me out, because now instead of getting excited for somebody to become AEW Women's Champion, I'm not going to get excited anymore and be like, ooh, she's going to win the title. Ooh, she's going to be an afterthought. And that kind of sucks. So I want them to put more importance on their AEW Women's Championship and also feature whoever the champion is and that championship belt more so on Dynamite, because that is their flagship show and that is a flagship championship belt, or at least it's supposed to be. So that's kind of how I feel about that. It kind of bums me out, but it is what it is. Actually, I don't like saying it is what it is. I just don't have any other saying. That's the only saying I know right now. Uriel, thank you very much for sending in this super chat. We got a comment here from Matt Charles in regards to Jade, who says, Jade's gotten immensely better. In my opinion, she's been a stronger champion than even the actual women's champion. That's by design, though. The TBS championship seems to be built even stronger. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the TBS championship, like, if you're, like, let's say you're not, like, a, you know, you're just a casual wrestling fan and you're tuning into AEW and you see the TBS championship and the AEW women's championship, I would be like, oh, the TBS championship's up here and the AEW women's championship is down here, because that's the way that it's essentially portrayed, right? That's by design. Like, I feel they can equally have two strong female champions on there, whether it be Jade as TBS or whoever's, you know, the champion, honestly. It's all about, you know, how you portray that on your television and all of that. So anyways, thank you so much to Uriel for sending that in. And we got, and Matt as well, for also sending in that comment here. And we actually got another super chat from Sheldon Jackson. Thank you so much to Sheldon, who says, Denise, did you notice Jermaine Dupri, the legendary music producer with Jade, sitting ringside with Stokely during the match? So I know Jermaine Dupri based on his name, but not on what he looks like. Damn, I'm so freaking lame, man. Fuck. So I know him by name. I don't know him based on what he actually looks like. So for me, sorry, guys, there's just people that you know by name, but not what they actually look like. Oh, man, I feel horrible. I suck. Sheldon, thank you so much for pointing this out. And I suck now. So there you go. All right, let's see what else we got. This is a comment from YT who says, the TBS championship is mainly defended on TNT and the TNT championship is mainly defended on TBS. It makes no sense. All right, let's go ahead and move on from this. Let's talk about the upcoming lineups for the shows here. So AEW Rampage, BTW, I will be here this Friday. I wasn't here last week because of GCW, but I am going to be here this Friday. BTW, guys, if I ever miss a show, it's never because I was like lazy or lounging around. I only ever miss a show if I have something really important going on that's like a can't miss opportunity. Fridays, I only ever miss the Friday shows if I'm covering like something wrestling related or am I GCW. This Wednesday was like the first AEW Dynamite show that I actually missed. It felt so weird, you know? But anyways, this Friday, AEW Rampage lineup, we got Hangman Page and John Silver versus The Butcher and The Blade. I'm looking forward to that. all these people I like. Lee Moriarty versus Dante Martin. That should be a fun little matchup. Looking forward to that. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, and Jamie Hayter are going to be in action. Good. Thumbs up. We're going to be getting a rap battle between Max Caster and Austin Gunn. I'm actually looking forward to this. I love hearing Max Caster rap. And you know Austin Gunn's probably going to do something dumb, so it'll balance itself out. Jay Lethal versus Christopher Daniels should be a pretty good matchup as well. Should probably be match of the night if it should be match of the night based on just reading these matches off by paper. Alrighty, so that was AEW Rampage. Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor is going to be happening this Saturday, guys. I will be covering that, so keep an eye out for that. We got the ROH Pure Championship, Wheeler Yuta versus Daniel Garcia. We got the ROH Women's Championship on the line, Mercedes Martinez versus Serena Deeb. The ROH World Tag Team Championships, 2 out of 3 falls between FTR and the Briscoes. And did I already talk about FTR? Shit, did I not talk about FTR yet? Okay, really quickly, I need to talk about that FTR promo. Dude, I was so into the promo, I didn't write down any notes for it. Sometimes that happens. Badass promo by Dax Harwood, by the way, because he goes on, and you know, they're addressing, he addresses this match that he's going to be having with the Briscoes, etc., right? But the big thing that I, you know, was really the thing that kind of captivated people, in regards to this promo, as he starts talking about, you know, a five-year-old little girl who finds out she has a hole in her heart and, you know, kind of a sob story, right? And you're thinking like, oh man, where's he going with this? Like, I don't know much about his personal life, so this was news to me. And, you know, he basically says how, you know, this little girl, she worked hard to basically get herself better and get herself healthier. And then he says, you know, this 8-year-old little girl overcame this, right? And then he says that little girl is my daughter. And I was like, oh shit, like damn, all the feels right now. And so he basically closes this off by saying that he is going to fight in this match like an 8-year-old girl and basically kick ass. So I really like that. That was very, very touching. A really good promo. At first I didn't know where it was going, and I really liked the way that he hit that line at the end. So it got you enough to care. And then it got you like, I don't know. It was kind of cool. I liked it. I liked the story and how he tied it into this promo. So that was really nice to see. Anyway, so that's going to be happening 2 out of 3 falls for the ROH World Tag Team Championships. We're also going to be getting Willow Nightingale versus Allison Kay. We're going to be getting the ROH Television Champion Samoa Joe versus Jay Lethal. 6-man Tag Team Championship match. The Righteous, which is Vincent, Bateman, and Dutch versus Dalton, Castle, and the Boys. Ring of Honor World Championship, Jonathan Gresham versus Claudio Castagnoli. So the card is definitely starting to shape up. Alrighty, and then also for next week, AEW Fight for the Fallen, we're going to be getting the AEW Women's World Championship, Thunder Rosa versus Miyu Yamashita, and the FTW Championship, Ricky Starks versus Danhausen. And we'll see if Hook gets involved in this. Who the hell knows? All right, guys. So now let's go ahead and get into the main event of this night here. And I'm curious to see what you guys felt about this, because this was interesting. Barbed wire everywhere match. Chris Jericho defeats Eddie Kingston. Let me see where to begin here, because there's a lot that happened here. I'm going to do a quick rundown and then kind of give my thoughts on all of this. So just some things to point out. Eddie Kingston kicks off this match right away, coming in on the attack on Chris Jericho with a barbed wire mic. That's freaking cool. I'm going to wrap barbed wire all over this microphone from now on. Jericho is the first one to actually go into the barbed wire. We get a couple of table spots with the barbed wire. The Jericho Appreciation Society, they're hung up on that shark cage. Apparently, Ruby can control the shark cage. Didn't really do much, but whatever. Ty Conti runs in at one point. She attacks Ruby Soho. This portion of the story feels very, very forced, but whatever. Anna Jay comes out, and at first she kind of pulls off Ty Conti off of Ruby Soho. So you're thinking, oh, Anna Jay is going to maybe, you know, I don't know, get mad, especially at her former friend, Ty Conti. Maybe she's going to align herself with Ruby Soho here. Maybe something along those lines, right? No, instead, she basically ends up, you know, basically agreeing with her friend and helping out Ty Conti. So then afterwards, they go and they take the little controller away from Ruby Soho. That manages to bring down the shark cage. They head on over there. Ty Conti tries to unlock the shark cage, but she can't. She can't unlock it. And it reminded me of Paul Heyman when he couldn't get the handcuffs off. That was really damn funny. So she couldn't get it, and they kept like moving the camera and showing something else so that we wouldn't see her struggling. But like three times, we still kept seeing her struggle. And then finally, somehow they just got out in between the bars. So I thought that was kind of funny that they didn't even need the key in the first place. Anyway, so that happened there. So then they get brought in. The Jericho Appreciation goes in there. They start all attacking Eddie Kingston. So then obviously Santana, Ortiz, Claudio, and Yuta, they all come out and they go at it with the Jericho Appreciation Society. Kingston then puts Jericho through a table with the Exploder. Gets a near fall. That happens. Jericho hits the Code Breaker. Kingston... Then afterwards we see Kingston wrap up Chris Jericho in the barbed wire and locks him in a submission. You think like, oh, this is going to be finally it. But instead, Sammy Guevara comes out. He super kicks Eddie Kingston. And then afterwards, we see Sammy give a bunch of elbows to Eddie Kingston after this. Then Chris Jericho, who's already wrapped in that barbed wire, ends up hitting Eddie Kingston with the Judas effect and wins the match in this fashion. So he wins the match with the Sammy Guevara. Now, in terms, I'll just be real with you guys. Like, I love these types of matches in terms of like the violence and all of that, you know, the barbed wire and the tables. Like, this is I like this stuff. Like, this is very, very, like, I'm into this type of stuff. I know a lot of people aren't. I personally am. Now, I was just at GCW this Friday, and I saw a lot of really cool shit. So, and obviously you've seen a lot of great stuff on GCW. And I hate to be this person that's like comparing things and whatnot. But when I just saw two really great, very, very entertaining death matches on GCW on Friday, and then on Wednesday, I get this death match between Jericho and Kingston. Two totally different things. So, and maybe if I hadn't watched GCW on Friday, maybe I would have liked this death match a little bit more. But this, to me, didn't really feel like a death match. It didn't really feel like a barbed wire everywhere death match, whatever. It didn't really feel like it. Like, I think the spots could have been cooler. I think they could have gotten a little bit more creative. I didn't really like the incorporation of seeing Jericho Appreciation Society go at it with, you know, all of Eddie Kingston's friends. I didn't care for the Ruby Soho Ty Conti stuff. That to me felt very, very forced and like forced into this story, so just to give, you know, Ty Conti something, since she's like the only female in this, you know, the whole thing. So for me, I really wasn't that invested in the match itself while I was watching it, because again, I had just watched GCW, dude. I saw a bunch of cool shit there that had me like losing my mind. So obviously I know we're not going to see the same things that we see on GCW on AEW, obviously, you know, two different promotions, two different things, but still, that was very, very fresh in my mind. And so I kind of saw this and judged it a little bit differently than I would have had I not been watching GCW as fresh as Friday. With that being said, the incorporation of Sammy Guevara at the end and him being the catalyst for why Jericho ends up winning this match, a little weak. Not really anything too over the moon. I mean, obviously, Sammy Guevara, he gets that heat. People don't like him. So, you know, that's what they want out of this. And clearly, it's working in that sense, because people were like, oh, man. I just think that this could have been just a little bit more. And I've seen better is what I'm trying to get at. I've seen better just across the board with stuff that AEW has done. This was sorry, guys. I can't think of anything better else to say. Nick Grosso sends in a super chat saying, by the way, thank you so much for this generous super chat, Nick. He says, not crazy about the main event. I don't get why Sammy Guevara wasn't in the shark cage, and with Anna Jay turning heel and reuniting with Ty Conti, Ruby Soho is going to need a partner. I think this is where Dakota Kai comes in. That would be freaking awesome, but it just feels too convoluted. It just feels like there's too much going on here. Man, I'm not really interested in the whole Ty Conti, Ruby Soho story, the whole Ruby Soho, Eddie Kingston thing. I'm a little bit not really interested in that. It just feels like too much for no major reason, right? It just feels too convoluted. So I may not be the biggest fan of that whole execution of all of that. And Thank you, Nick Rosso, for sending in this super chat. All right, let's go ahead and see what else we got here. And this is from Xeno Hours. Says, AEW shouldn't do any more barbed wire death matches. The last several minutes of this match deserves to be on Botchmania. Not good at all. Also, Eddie should have won. See, I don't want to say that they shouldn't do them anymore because I'm still a sucker for them, to be honest. Like, y'all just heard me say how much I like this type of stuff. But also, like, even just a lot of the stuff that, like, Impact has been doing, like, they've done a lot of really good stuff. Like, that Monsters Ball match that we saw with Sammy and Moose, like, that was freaking incredible. And so when I have, like, those matches, like, they stick out to me. When stuff like this is executed well, they really, really stand out. And I don't think that there was any particular moment in this match that's really going to stand out to me in a couple of months is kind of what I'm trying to get at. Like, matches like this to me are supposed to have, like, these moments that are, like, unforgettable, and you're like, holy shit, this was great. Just like top to bottom, really, really captivated me. And I don't necessarily think I felt that way. All right. And oh yeah, and I forgot to add that Jericho gets thrown into the barbed wire platform that they had on the outside of the ring afterwards. So thank you, Sam 3, for reminding me of that, because I kind of forgot that. All right. And let's go ahead and see what people are saying. I'm trying to see if there's anybody here who actually liked this. We got a couple people that pretty much did not like the last couple of minutes, and, you know, more people bringing up some of those unfortunate spots that probably didn't go as they wanted to. And this is from YT, who says it's time to move on from Jericho versus Kingston. Kingston should have won, and this should have been the blow off. Well, this is clearly going to go on for a bit. Fernando Zaya says it's a solid death match. I was disappointed with the finish. Sammy coming in last minute to save Jericho is getting old. Jack says, too many cooks in the kitchen. It's a good saying. Let's see what else we got here. This is from Lenny, who says, I was fine with the finish for this reason above all else. Jericho won because he had the numbers that Kingston didn't. One-on-one, Kingston shown is he is better than Jericho. If Jericho didn't get the help, Kingston wins in a dog walk. He did get Jericho's blood, which was what he was after from the jump. The loss doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt Eddie Kingston. It's just more so, I think, the execution of it all. I think it was more so like the execution, but you're right in the sense that, you know, obviously the Jericho Appreciation Society and Sammy, somewhat an outnumbered, you know, Kingston's guys, but again, they were still out there though. Like, it with his friends coming in, his, you know, Jericho's buddies being there, Kingston's buddies being there, it felt like it kind of evened out at the end for the finish to be what it was not. It wasn't the exclamation point of the match that you needed. All right, let's see what else we got here. We got Walter Johnson putting over this match. Let's see. Honestly, I feel, and a lot of people bringing up that they feel that Eddie should have won as well. This is from Saul, who says, I think Kingston was going to rise above and win, but this feels like no one is getting ahead. What does Jericho gain from winning? This is just going to continue, guys. This has to continue. Robert Dinkins, great show, terrible ending. I saw a lot of that actually on Twitter when I had basically tweeted that I was just about to start watching Dynamite. A lot of people, or a couple of people, were like, great show, bad ending. And I'm like, what the hell happened in that match? I didn't even know, like, for sure if they were going to have this be the final match. I thought, well, what if they want to give it a lot of extra time? And usually when they want to give a match extra time, they have it at the start of the show. So I was like, okay, like, what's going to happen? So I start watching the show and I'm like, okay, I know where this is going. Alrighty. And let's go ahead and see. Manuel says that barbed wire match was a train wreck. Oh, man, guys. Alrighty. Well, there you go. Could have been better. This is going to continue. We'll see where it goes from here. But that was AEW Fyter Fest week number 2. Before I wrap up the stream, guys, just a friendly reminder, if you are new here, if this was your first time catching the show, I don't normally go on at this hour. I usually go live immediately after the show. I'm live on Tuesdays to chat NXT 2.0. I'm live on Wednesdays to chat AEW Dynamite. And then Fridays, I'm on to talk about Smash SmackDown and Rampage. So Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I am here. On top of that, check out the latest. It's one of the new shows that I do here on F4W Online. It's like a couple minutes long, and it's just a news rundown of all of the headlines for the day. If you guys haven't checked those out, check those out. Give those a couple of thumbs up. Leave some nice comments if you guys want, and make sure to subscribe to F4W Online. Last but not least, if you haven't already, head on over to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Denise Salcedo. I got a lot of different stuff going up there. A lot of, you know, different interviews with boxers, with fighters, with wrestlers, you name it. It is up there. Please go check that out. Give it some love. I'm like nearing almost 70,000. I'm still a couple thousand away, but I'm thinking about it already. So make sure you guys head on over there and give that some love. And then also Twitter and Instagram at _Denise Salcedo. I will see you guys later on. Thank you guys so much for joining me here today, and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye, everyone.